Hey guys, what is going on? We are here in the zone. New episode today here as always with Giancarlo Aulino, my boy. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. How about you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great. You know, we're here in the studio with, shout out to producer Nick over there. He's doing a fantastic job drinking his Evian right there, chugging it. I want to quickly start today's episode, man. We all know that we have a new NHL season underway. This shit has been rolling quickly, man. We're already five games in. I want to quickly talk about the NHL's biggest surprises and biggest disappointments. We're going to start it off, though, of course, with the surprises. It's going to be epic. So first off, I want to talk about, I think, the biggest surprise so far this season. Aulino, you could agree with me or not. I think it's Alex DeBrincat and the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
Like, I saw an article today where DeBrincat has more goals than the Capitals and the Sharks. Now, we all know last year he played on Ottawa. He was not happy. You know, the morale was not good. Can a morale change a player that much?
I thought him going to Detroit, of all teams, was going to lead the other way. Like, we'd be seeing him going down to the AHL soon. Conditioning stint. So I'm surprised at Detroit more than DeBrincat. I think they put him in a position to succeed. Steve Yzerman, what he's done over there, what he did in Tampa, he carried that over. Detroit was like a lost cause, it seemed like. And Stevie Y, that guy's gold as a GM. I don't know how he does it. As an executive, what he's been able to do is crazy.
Gold as an executive, gold as a player. Guy really doesn't miss much. But hey, 9 goals in 7 games. Their power play, I think, is number one in the league. I just picked up Shane Gostisbehere Baron Fantasy. Guy's getting he's clapping it from the point every game, getting goals. But another guy too, I got to bring him into it because he's a centerman, is Dylan Larkin, man. Like, we talk all the time about Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel, you know, like the premier crops of centers in for America. Is Dylan Larkin now in that category with Jack Eichel and Matthews?
I think he slowly, like, he had that potential since he got drafted. I think it took a lot longer than everybody thought it would with him, but just what he's been able to do, complete game, face-off machine out there. Finally coming into the zone. There were rumors last year, I remember, that he maybe wanted out. I don't blame him. You know, like, he was in that kind of environment, losing all the time. So with Yzerman turning it around, and you have that young core, like Seider on the back now, DeBrincat. So I think they have like a nice little system for him where he can finally succeed and get to that next level.
I mean, he wanted out because Bertuzzi left, right? And that was like his best friend in the world. So if you can imagine your best friend being on your team and then they trade your best friend, you're kind of in that dark place for a bit. But I'll, you know, you have any other surprises?
I have to go with Ovi. I know he's started slow in the past and then ends up with like 50 goals. But at his age now, I know they were talking about it on the broadcast. Is he regressing a little bit? I'm seeing like the movement there taking a toll. He's getting like a ton of shots. He had like 15 shots. They showed against the Leafs, but nothing's going in the net and a penalty shot. So I'm worried about
it. Yeah, that penalty shot was not deserving at all. That was not a penalty shot. But I think I got to also talk about, for surprises, is, man, we've been bashing this guy since, I mean, his contract is garbage. Nick will agree with me on this one. John Tavares, he's been phenomenal this year, man. He's got 10 points, 6 games. Really rolling. I know being a captain in Toronto, it's not easy. Ask Dion, ask all the guys in the past. He's doing a phenomenal job this year. He's leading the Leafs in scoring, tied with the other surprise of the season, I think, William Nylander so far. That guy wants to get paid badly. I mean, I don't know if you saw his goal against Minnesota. You saw his goal yesterday. Like, the guy is flying out there. Because we always talk about Matthews and Marner being the guys, right? Tavares and Nylander right now, to me, are outperforming Marner. For sure, Marner. Matthews, obviously, the 2 hat tricks, the first 2 games, is that's godly. But what are your thoughts on Nylander, man? The guy has been insane.
I think the number he was asking for was $10 million. That's going to get boosted up to 11 if he keeps this up. I think he's playing for July 1st, 2024. And if I'm the Leafs, I'm okay with it because he has that chemistry with those guys. I would roll the dice on him. You got Bertuzzi in. You pretty much made your trade deadline moves early. If you lose Nylander, it's going to be a what if. So I just hope it works out for them.
It's the type of thing where I talk about it with Nick all the time, man. If if you trade William Nylander, you're not winning that trade. It doesn't matter what you get in return. If you get that perennial defenseman that you've been looking for, you're still not winning that trade because William Nylander is looking insane to start. But I want to also move on to another Canadian team, man. We saw the first two games. Vancouver demolished Edmonton, and we'll talk a little bit more about Edmonton, but not for the positive. Brock Besser, man, this is a player, 4 goals to start the season. We saw a couple of years ago, I remember way back. Remember when he was in the All-Star game as the rookie and he won the car and all that? Yeah. And do you think Brock Besser has finally found an extra gear, or do you think he'll slowly start to, you know, kind of regress again?
I'll be optimistic. I'll say yes, just because of who his teammates are. If you can't make it work with a guy like Pedersen and just all the back-end stuff that Quinn Hughes is doing, all the assists he gets involved in, you're eventually going to get somebody finding you the puck and put you in a position to score. So I'll be optimistic with him, but I think it's going to go on the decline a little bit.
I agree with you, man. People, one of my Zios took Besser in the 4th round of a pool. That's a big mistake there on his part. But another guy I want to talk about too, man. Florida was a team where, I mean, we're Toronto fans. We Want Florida has been the meme for the last 5-6 months. Whereas now, man, I'm realizing that they had a player on their team that has always been, I think, a little bit underrated, and that's Sam Reinhart. I think to start the year, he's had 6 goals. Makhachuk doesn't have a goal yet. I don't know what's going on with that. I think he's got to start stepping up a little more. But, man, Sam Reinhart is just a player that you want on your team. It's like a Ryan O'Reilly type deal, except he's like 5-6 years younger than him. So good on Florida for that. But what do you think about Sam Reinhart, man? Because you know, they're just a bunch of underdogs. Like last year they came 8th, they beat Boston, they beat Toronto, they go to the final. Verhaeghe was a Marley at one point. Now he's a 40-goal scorer. Sam Reinhart, you know, 2nd overall, kind of didn't live up. Now look at him. He's doing well. Do you think Reinhart could also keep it up, 75, 80 points this year?
I think he can. I think between him and Sam Benn, I think Reinhart probably has more potential to do it. Like him, Verhaeghe came out of nowhere for them, like what happened with Buffalo, and then Florida's taking advantage of all these guys that are cast-offs on other teams. So I think he is a guy that could keep it up. I like the way he's been able to find a role for himself in the league. Like a lot of people are labeling him as a bust early on when it didn't work out. So I think he'll maintain. He's going to be a guy that I think is going to be part of that core for a little bit.
Yeah, he's not like his brother Griffin Reinhart over there. Yeah, I had
that was rough.
It was rough. Ask Edmonton how that trade went with. Could have had Matt Barzal, but oh well. Moving on though, I want to quickly talk about. You talked about it, man. It's Wall O'Clock.
Yeah,
Joseph Wall. What are your thoughts on this guy? I mean, he had all the momentum in the playoffs. I was kind of like, you know, guys like O'Dog, McClellan, man, they're like, yeah, you know what, pump the brakes. He's played, what, like 15 games? Man, the other night against Tampa Bay, I think he told Sheldon Keefe everything he wanted. Like, he said he wants more work. Samsonov gets pulled, what, 1st period, allows 3 goals on, what, 8 shots? And then Wall comes in, 25 saves, basically a shutout, and the Leafs come back and win. So I'm going to ask you this question. I know it's a bit of a hot take, or maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but is Joseph Wall already the starting goalie, or is he kind of 1B trickling into 1A very shortly?
Yeah, I think he's 1B trickling into 1A shortly. I think with Samsonov, like what I predicted when Matt Murray was on board, and they pretty much stole Samsonov for like $1.5 million, and he came in. Eventually, when Matt Murray gets injured, you know what's going to happen, and it did. And then Samsonov went in, stole the job, was a guy in the playoffs, and all of a sudden Samsonov gets pulled and Wall took advantage of that opportunity. So if you're just going by the calendar year of 2023, it's Wall's net. He's outperformed Samsonov since, I would say, April of last year or this year. So I think Wall is going to be that number one going to the playoffs. And I don't think, like, Samsonov, what didn't help him was going to arbitration. Oh. Right there, that was like, okay, you want to do that? Enjoy this year. We're going to put you on the bench and then enjoy that $4 million, because next year you're going to probably be at $1 million and hovering over the AHL roster.
I think the Leafs look like absolute geniuses, don't they? Just signing Sammy to 1 year after, like, what Edmonton did with Campbell. Oh. Can you imagine we did that with Samsonov?
Yikes. They dodged a bullet.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%, man. I think Joseph Wall, since May, since April, whenever we lost, he's been the goalie. He's been the guy you rely on. He looks like a, he's as calm as a guy like a Carey Price. He's as, you know, like he is to me what Frederik Andersen was when he first came here. I don't know if that's a good comparable. You don't have to quote me on that, but what Frederik Andersen reminded me of was when he was 27, 28 with us, very calm goaltender. Yes, he would allow stinkers, but he would never, ever like slam his stick. He wouldn't show his emotion too much. Yeah. Whereas you see it in interviews with Samsonov, man. Like if he has a bad game, he'll go out there and he'll make an idiotic comment. It's like, man, just polish it up and just be better for the next game. You don't have to say, oh, I don't care about this. I don't care about this. Like, just relax, you know? So I feel like Samsonov doesn't take that type of bad performances well, whereas Joseph Woll just, man, I don't know. He just, if he has a bad game, he just puts his head down and he does the work. And it's, I like, think
he's media trained.
Exactly. I mean, I haven't really heard a Joseph Woll post game yet. I think he's done maybe one or two, but he's a very calm guy. And I think that's a perfect guy for this market in Toronto, being the goalie. Sure. Like, I think it's perfect because James Reimer was great here. Eddie Belfour was great here. Cujo was great here. We had a lot of duds after that, as we know. I mean, I don't have to bring up the names. I'll bring up one just for fun. Vesa Toskala.
Stud. You want to discuss this in the savior, the monster?
Oh, the monster, man. That was the most potential since Joseph Woll. Like, I think out of all the goalies we've had, the most praise other than Woll was Gustafsson. And what happened to him? Was he like, did he get hurt or something?
Yeah, he got hurt and then he was solid elsewhere for a little bit. Carried Detroit, made him get into the playoffs, and Howard came back and he was in and out. I don't think he plays anymore though.
The last couple surprises I quickly want to talk about, the rookies, man, because we praise the rookie classes quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now, was it last year or 2 years ago? It wasn't as strong. Michael Bunting was a finalist for it. Whereas this year you actually have franchise altering talents being in like fifth for voting. Like you have Leo Carlson who sniped one the other night. Bedard is absolutely, to me, I think he's overachieving. I thought this would be a guy that would be getting bodied early on, would have to adjust his game, but this guy is just a bullet. Like his shot is amazing. His work ethic is insane. I saw he stayed like an hour and a half after practice shooting. Like the guy's 18. That's insane. You should not be doing that. But that's what separates the great from the good. And that's, I think, what Bedard is. Are there any surprises so far that you've seen out of any of the rookies so far?
With you on that, like it's not really a surprise, but like I'm just surprised how fast he's just like come into the league. Like McDavid, there was a few games where it was a slow start. Same thing with Eichel. Took them a little while just to get their adjustment to the league, like the NHL style of play, physical. But Bedard coming in and playing the way he is, I know Chicago has like sights set on first overall picks again, but Taylor Hall is going to be a nice little mooch in fantasy. So if you want to get those points there, him and Corey Perry, yeah, nice little.
You want to talk about a mooch right now, Corey Perry, man. The guy, his fantasy value is freaking skyrocketing as we speak right now, and he hates Toronto. You know what? I loved what he did the other day when he pointed to the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
I love how much of a shit he is. It's awesome. But you know who, man, I actually got to go with Matty Nyes because the guy, like, you see what he did in the playoffs and people are saying, you got to remember, we're in Toronto. So the expectation is this guy is insane. He's going to outplay Willie. It's like, dude, relax. The guy hasn't played yet. He was dominant in college. He had phenomenal line mates, like dominated college, but it's a different monster. He gets his first goal in the playoffs for Florida, against Florida, sorry. And then, yeah, you know, he comes out the gate a little flat. He's on the third line. You don't really know what to expect from him. His line mates were, I think, Cali Yarncroke, Max Domi, first game. And all of a sudden now, last two, three games, the guy looks as impactful as any other player on the team. He's a big body. He likes hitting. We need more guys like Matty Nyes, man. I think low-key, if I had to make a prediction right now, I won't say like 65 points, but I think 55 and being a really key impact player on this team is not far-fetched at all.
Yeah, with that, I think I'm going to try and keep him on the bottom six. Like if Bertuzzi didn't come in, I think right away he would have been on the top line, but I think with Bertuzzi and Domi coming in, they want to move him down a little bit, make sure that salary cap number when they re-sign him is a nice little bridge number that's something they can afford. So I think Nyes is going to be like a really solid third line for them, but eventually he's going to be a top six in the league.
Oh, for sure. And just to end the surprises, man, I just want to talk about two teams specifically. We're talking before we went live. I got to bring this team up because to me, I know you think they're going to fall off a cliff soon. Philadelphia has looked really, really solid. Shout out to Sean Couturier finally being healthy. It's been, I think, 16 months he hasn't played, which is insane to think about. But I don't think he's the captain, but they should have a captain and he should be the captain. Konechny's been phenomenal. Carter Hart, what else can we say about him, man? Like, whenever you doubt him, he's going to come back and have a good, maybe not good year, but a good stretch. And to start, he's looked really good. What do you think so far about Philly?
I just like the way that they started strong. That's not what they're known for. They're known for the goalies really crapping the bed early, and then after the fans already calling for them to get traded right when the season starts, Brizgalov comes to mind, and Bobrovsky, and we saw how well that paid off for them when Bobrovsky got moved. So
Mother Russia.
they overreact a little bit with goalies. Their GMs rush to give them long-term extensions, so hopefully they look at the team, adjust accordingly. Tortorella, everybody knows how I feel about him. I love him as a coach.
He's a beauty.
He is. Total opposite of Mike Babcock. Like, at least you know what you're getting with Tortorella. He doesn't go and ask you for your phone and put up pictures of the family online for the whole team to see. Tortorella will just tell you, hey, you're not playing well tonight. And then it goes on his business.
You see that spot on the bench? That has your name on it. Sit there. But yeah, and of course, I got to talk about the Bruins. It's 6-0 to start. What the hell, man? Like, they get rid of Krejci, Bergeron, Taylor Hall. So many guys are gone, and yet they're still undefeated. I'm not going to say it's Ullmark, because just like what you think about Philly, I think Ullmark's going to just fall off a cliff eventually. He has to. I thought he would be traded, because you would think his value's never going to get higher. He won the Vezina Trophy. But, man, what are your thoughts on Boston, man? Like, they got this rookie Matthew Poitras who's scoring every game now. JVR looks like rejuvenated to all hell. What do you think this is just another typical Boston culture, or do you think they're actually this good?
I think it's going to be typical. JVR is going to get injured eventually. We know that's going to happen. His foot, something, the lace, it's going to get caught up. He's going to get hurt. So then they're going to adjust their lines. Lucic, he'll probably hit somebody, get hurt too. Marchand.
Little pest.
Can't keep his tongue in his mouth, and he'll get suspended. And then Ullmark will probably get traded. Swayman will take over. And we'll see, like, Boston slowly move down the standings. I don't think they're going to be, like, the President's Trophy winning team. That even though they have good, solid defensemen, I just don't see them getting back to that level where they're dominating the league.
No chance. I was telling Nick before the season. I mean, maybe it was after game one, because me and Nick are saying, who's the one team in the Atlantic that made it that you don't think is making it? And obviously you're going to say Boston. After all the guys they lost, I'm not going to say Florida, because I still think Florida. Bobrovsky, we saw the other night, when he's on his game, holy shit, man, this guy is insane. So they got Tkachuk, Barkov, Reinhardt, Verhaeghe. Like, they got the depth. Boston, is Matty Poitras going to get 35 goals? Probably not. I think eventually they're going to regress. It's a surprise for now, but I think they're going to fall off a cliff. But now, we're going to go into the disappointments. And, man, the disappointments so far have actually been shocking to me. This is something where you look at the standings. Yes, it's early. Are we being a little too judgmental? Probably. But I'm going to start it off. You already know where I'm going with this. The biggest disappointing team so far has been Edmonton. It's not even close. Yes, you signed Jack Campbell. Yes, Stuart Skinner has a phenomenal rookie season. But you put that together, man. I've been saying this for the last 5 years since we started doing this pod. Their goaltending has never been it. You have Mike Smith go to the conference finals. You know you're not beating Colorado. You just know you're not. They got swept. What are your thoughts on this Edmonton team, the way that they're built, the way that they're structured? I know they got Evan Bouchard, who's potentially a 70-point defenseman now. Darnell Nurse's contract is terrible. Just what do you think is going wrong here in Edmonton?
I just think they're throwing too much stock into like trying to have like every all four lines score instead of just putting your best players together and let them run. I would just put McDavid and Draisaitl together. I know it would take away the depth, but you have two of the top five players probably in the league.
Easily,
like getting over 100 points a year. Just put them together and just let their chemistry grow and dominate teams. And then as the game's like 3-4, then adjust your lines and have them split up. But I think that's your biggest problem. Like they go in and get Connor Brown. That's an amazing move. If it was like 5 years ago before Connor Brown got injured, him and McDavid, that chemistry they had in junior.
Oh my God.
After that injury, it's tough to like expect them to be that quick and keep up with McDavid. So I think that kind of bit them there. But Zach Hyman's a good pro. But again, you're asking too much of a guy like that. You paid him too much. You have to have him produce. So Edmonton's in a pickle.
I just think you look at Edmonton too, and there's so many flaws to their lineup. Like you just saw Nugent Hopkins put up 100 points. Now, is he going to do that again? Probably not. You got Ryan McLeod, who to me is a great third-line centerman, one of the better third-line centermen, especially in this day and age, the way the game has transcended into this quick pace where we've never seen it before. I just look at this team on paper, and I'm like, this is not it, man. Like, you compare them to Vegas, to Colorado, it's not even close. And a team, to me, that's actually basically on par with Edmonton is LA, man.
Yeah.
They went to game 7 last year. They get Pierre-Luc Dubois this year. They're more physical. What would happen, you think, if, like, again, LA doesn't have goaltending either. Phoenix Copley and Cam Talbot, that's not going to help you advance to the Stanley Cup final unless Drew Doughty's logging 35 minutes a night, Kopitar's, you know, turning the clock back. But man, like Edmonton, I'm just looking at their team. Darnell Nurse, not doing it for me. Never really was doing it for me. Bouchard is great, but is he a good overall two-way defenseman? I don't think so. So you said it perfectly. Connor Brown was a great addition 5 years ago. It's a little too late. I still really have, I love the guy. He used to play in Toronto, you know, downtown Connor Brown, helped us make the playoffs in 2016. 40 points, I think, is realistic. But another guy I really want to level in on, Alino, and you're probably going to laugh, Evander Kane.
Oh, man.
Is this a type of player where if you're Connor McDavid, you go in the dressing room and you just see all the antics that Evander Kane has had over the years? Do you go to management and say, if there's one guy we want traded, it's that guy? Because he looks like he has been a problem child. But again, 2 years ago in the playoffs, what do you have, 16 goals? Yeah. So, like, what do you think they do with a guy like that?
If I'm management, I just tell McDavid, you wanted him here? Suck it up. Because, like, I don't think anyone's going to really line up to get him because they're going to ask him what his salary is, how much they want in return. Edmonton's not just going to offload someone that they kind of need, like, his style of play. So, I think their hands are tied with them. They just got to hope it gels with the way McDavid continues to play and find the scoring touch there.
Now, I know we're talking about this a little too early, but I got to ask, who's the goalie that Edmonton goes out and grabs?
Oh, man. I would have said Florida's backup last year, Lyon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that wouldn't do good to me right now. So I would go with at least Samsonov.
I mean, hey, it's a trend going there. Campbell, Samsonov, just take them all. Why not? But I also want to talk about Buffalo being a disappointment just because they're oozing with talent.
Yeah.
To me, it's a similar situation with Ottawa from last year. Ottawa last year, you know, Brady Tkachuk, Tim Stützle, they got Claude Giroux. I think it was at the deadline. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, shit, I think Ottawa's a top three team in our division. It's like, yeah. No, like, pump the brakes with that. I think the same thing with Buffalo. Yeah, you know, they're great. Tage Thompson had a freaking insane year last year. Jeff Skinner, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold. You don't know what you're getting with him. But do you think this team is playoff bound? Because I look at their team. I look at the improvements in the Metro division. I think they might squeak in. But even then, I don't think that's good enough for their expectations. So for me, they're a disappointment.
Yeah, for me too. Like, you look at the talent they have, Owen Power.
Didn't even mention him.
Yeah, you have him coming up. He was highly touted. Like, their forwards, Thompson, Tuke, like, these guys should be a playoff team right now. Like Ottawa, they go and get Tarasenko, and that was like a random signing. And Buffalo should be making those signings where you look like, oh, okay, they're attracting some talent to come over. So
Patrick Kane, maybe. Kane.
Yeah. Yeah. Uber drivers, taxi drivers, look out for Patty Kane. So it should be fun.
It's probably going to be Florida or Buffalo. Let's be real here. Yeah. Patrick Kane. I mean, if it is Toronto, and I was hearing that all summer, but let's be honest, it's Toronto in the summer. We've heard Stamkos before. We've heard Subban before.
Do you think Taves follows, though?
Taves is an interesting guy because he looks like he's out of it, like, completely. Like as a player, I never like bashing guys like him because he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest to ever do it in a Blackhawk uniform. But what we saw, man, last 2 years, he's lost a step a lot. It's kind of like, I'm not comparing him to David Backes, but the fall off is like David Backes. Yeah. Where Backes was great in St. Louis, and then he goes to Boston, getting paid $5.5 million, and it's like, what happened? Like, you can't skate anymore. So if Taves were to go where Patrick Kane is, that's probably the narrative of the year, because that's like, that's awesome. But would Taves thrive in Buffalo? Probably. I don't know. Like, you would have to make a tough decision there. Are you benching guys like Jack Quinn or like a young like Mittelstadt? Don't think so. So I don't know about Taves. I know Kane for sure. Teams are going to call for him. I think if I'm Kane, you look at Florida, you look at the beach. It's a nice spot.
Yeah. I would go there. Nice little one-year deal.
But I want to quickly talk more about, you know, Ilya Samsonov again, man. Like, this guy is the biggest disappointment so far. Because you sign him 1 year. He had a 924 save percentage in the playoffs. He was a savior, apparently. It was him. He was the reason why we beat Tampa. Not anybody else. It was because of Samsonov. He was riding high, and then Florida happens, and shits the bed. Is Samsonov a guy where, like you said, he should maybe go to Edmonton? If he goes to Edmonton, what is a realistic stat for him? Like, is he a guy that'll get you 30 wins but have a 905 save percentage? Is that like a Jordan Binnington-esque? Or do you think he can still find that potential and be like a Saros? Because he was a first-round pick.
I think it's going to be tough just because he's not consistent enough. Like, in the playoffs, he was really good up until Wall came in just because of the circumstance. But if I'm Washington, I might actually look at maybe a three-team deal. You offload Mantha to another team, try to get Samsonov from the Leafs to pair up with Kemper. I think they need some depth there and some goalie competition.
Oh, for sure, man. If Mantha's, oh, God. Washington has been bad. They've been disappointing. That's a great, great way to just go to the next topic. Ovechkin, you already talked about it, man. Like, he's lost a step, I think. First time in his career where he's gone two straight games with no shots. I think it's the pace. I think the pace of this game is way too much for him. He's still probably going to get 35 goals. He's going to tell us to shut up, eat our words in this one. But, like, yeah, man, their core is too old now. Like, you got Nicklas Backstrom coming off hip or back surgery. Not too sure which one. Kuznetsov has one foot out the door. Dylan Strom, to me, is just like Jeff Skinner. He's hot or really cold. And of course, TJ Oshie, better known as TJ Sochi, he's also kind of stepped back. So I think Washington for sure is not a playoff team. I guarantee it. Is this where, if you're Washington, do you try and trade Ovechkin or any of those guys?
I think it would be tough just because of how much money he's making, and it would have to revolve around like where he wants to go. He would have a lot of say in that. So I think their best option is if Backstrom gets an injury, you can LTIR him. But I don't see where Washington, they're going to have to really rely on development right now.
Good old LTIR, man. You got to love the LTIR. It's like a cheat code or something. Ask Tampa Bay, ask Toronto. We're in on it. So again, I want to continue with the age in terms of disappointment, and I think it's the core of Pittsburgh as well. They started out hot. They won the first two games. They've lost the last four in a row. They extended Tristan Jarry. Our good old boy, Mr. Analytic, Kyle Dubas, goes there. He somehow snags Erik Karlsson. Do you think Pittsburgh is a playoff team in a full 82-game season, or do you think they're there with the likes of Buffalo, Ottawa, like just scratching the surface to make it?
I think they're probably... I know they're talented enough. Like, Gensel is a really good player, but I think they're going to be, like, just hovering over the wild card and battling there with teams like the Islanders, Rangers, Buffalo, Florida. It's going to be tough for them because you have an older core, so you're going to probably want to rest some of those guys. Goaltending has been an issue a little bit, so I think they'll just manage to get in, but I think the trade deadline is going to be a real big one for Kyle Dubas.
I do too, and he's always been the guy to make a big move. I don't know who it's going to be at this point. I think a good team to look at is Seattle because, to me, they're another disappointment. Their offense has run dry. Yeah. Where last year, I was saying to everybody, that this team are frauds. They are not a playoff team. I still don't think they had any business beating Colorado. I don't know how the hell they beat Colorado. Did they beat Dallas? They did beat Dallas, so they went to the conference final last year. Don't expect them to make the playoffs, Alino. Do you agree with me, or do you think I'm kind of out of my mind over here?
I think they got a good chance if they turn it around, because McCann showed he has that scoring touch, and I'm never going to count out Jordan Eberle.
That's your boy.
Big fan of him. But maybe I think Eberle, if the season goes on and he's like up and down a little bit and shows some potential, I think a team will take a chance on him.
Oh, for sure. It's going to
be like an Eastern Conference team, though.
Yeah, even the way Jaden Schwartz has started.
Yeah.
What is he, 32 now? Yeah. He used to be a point-per-game player on St. Louis. But, man, a lot of disappointments. It's unfortunate to see a lot of surprises. But, man, Alino, I always got to give it back to you for wrestling. I know you're a wrestling guy. So kick it off, man. I know one of my favorites of all time, just jump ship. Can you quickly explain that?
So at All In and Wembley Stadium, biggest event in AEW's history, because they actually had like a stadium of 80,000 people. CM Punk was scheduled to go on there, face Samoa Joe in the opener. Nice big match to kick off the card. The main event of the, I guess, a pre-show portion was Jungle Boy. And he went through like glass, and apparently that was an issue that Punk didn't like when they worked together. Ouch. On Collision. And he went to the camera and said, "Oh, real glass, cry me a river." Well, they went backstage, and apparently Phil Brooks attacked Jungle Boy. They got into a little tussle. Stuff was pushed. Tony Khan apparently said he was fearful of his life. Never been that scared.
That's an over-exaggeration.
And they announced that they fired him in Chicago, of all places. And the crowd wasn't happy. And... it wasn't like a release where there's not non-complete, so CM Punk apparently can show up anywhere he wants, and WWE looks like in the sweepstakes for November Survivor Series, which is in Chicago.
I think that's insane, man. I think CM Punk is a guy at this point, you're going to laugh at me with this take. CM Punk is a guy at this point where you need him when the lights are the brightest. But is he going to deliver for you? Because I'm probably one of the biggest CM Punk fans. But the last, he's been in AEW since 2021.
Yeah, when they
advance,
but yeah.
Yeah, so since he's been back, I can't name you five insane matches he's put on. I can't. I really can't. I mean, the match with Samoa Joe was fine. I liked the whole blood. That was cool, seeing blood again. But... his matches with Jon Moxley, to me, were garbage. Like, most of them were not good. Again, one of them was a squash because they're playing off his injury. But I just think his run was just bland. Like, it wasn't anything special. If you're WWE at this point, Roman Reigns is part-time. Let's be real here. CM Punk in Chicago, November Survivor Series... perfect scenario, perfect location. Now people are going to say, Chris, it's been done a million times. He's come back and returned in Chicago. Are they just using that for a pop? Well, yeah, obviously. But here's the thing. Is CM Punk going to have a warm ovation when he comes back?
I think he will, just because, like, I think WWE is where everyone thought he should have just gone back to begin with. Like, water under the bridge, they make up. Vince McMahon, like, had Ultimate Warrior come back and... they hated each other's
Bret
guts.
Hart, yeah. Bret Hart.
And you look at the personal stuff that happened between that family. Like, he went back. I think CM Punk will go back. Like, everybody's mending fences with him. Like, Vince McMahon's not, like, petty in that aspect, where he could be a little, but if he knows that it could raise merchandise sales, I think he'll sit down with the team. I think this might be a Triple H call, though, because they're the real issue. So I think Triple H and CM Punk get in a room. They talk it out. Vince McMahon signs a check. He'll be back.
Now, let's say he comes back, talks with Paul Levesque, Triple H, the King of Kings. Is CM Punk's first opponent? Now, this is going to maybe cue me to go to the next topic, but is CM Punk's next opponent, is it a singles match? Is it a star that he's building? Is it Austin Theory? Is it an LA Knight? Is it someone that we've never really seen at that level before? Or do you think they're just going to go with, he's CM Punk, Survivor Series, let's ride on a high, he takes on Seth Rollins?
I think if they do Seth, they might push that for WrestleMania.
World that's Rumble. Big enough. Yes.
I think Drew has to, that storyline has to go on. Drew, you have Shinsuke. Like, once that's over, they can go in that direction. But I think CM Punk should just return at Survivor Series to end the show and set up a feud with Roman, where, you know, Roman might not be there for, until December. You can build up for a month, and you can have CM Punk build it up. His first match back, do Austin Theory, since Theory's been working with all the old school legends. So
yeah, he's getting Theory buried.
And then, yeah, give Punk the win over Theory, make it a hard-fought match, show Punk can still hang with those guys like Austin Theory, and then Punk versus Roman to end the year, leads a Royal Rumble, and you start the build for Punk at WrestleMania.
Do you think Punk is a guy that can win the Royal Rumble?
I think it's possible, but it's going to rely on what the Rock schedule is looking like.
Because I love talking about this. You know, it's my favorite pay-per-view is the Royal Rumble. You can't have Cody Rhodes win it again.
No.
So, I would hate that. To me, you're booking yourself in a corner here, because you've been narrating, I have to finish the story. Now I'm with Jey Uso. Now I have to finish the story. I think it's Cody versus Roman. I think that's the right call at Mania. That, in part, leads me to believe the winner of the Royal Rumble is going to go on and face the World Heavyweight Champion at WrestleMania. I think they need to promote that title a little more as not just a consolation belt because Roman's off.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of vibe I've been getting. You know me, I love Shinsuke. I love the opportunity he had, but the guy lost 3 times in a row. What the hell does that do for him? Nothing. Seth Rollins, now this is a hot take for me. I'm going to say this right here. We're live. Seth Rollins, this run is getting as cringy as the 2019 Seth Rollins.
I'm with you.
Oh my God, man. Can you lose the belt already? I want to see Damian Priest cash in. I want to see the potential. Or I want to see what Drew McIntyre can do at the top. Because, man, somebody told me he has not held a title in 3 years. 3 years.
I think they have to pull a trick. I thought Shinsuke, they should have at least done it. Even if it's going to be a one-month reign, he lost 3 times. You couldn't give him the title in the second match.
3 times, man.
And then Drew McIntyre, I think now if he's turning heel, you have to give him the title. If he loses, you pretty much just should say, okay, we'll release you and you can be a free agent, because that's his best opportunity. So if he doesn't turn heel, I think we'll see Seth Rollins going into Mania with it. Maybe CM Punk and Rollins. I heard Will Ospreay say he's open to going to WWE, so that match would make sense. But yeah, if Will Ospreay does do that, he would have to change his in-ring style a little bit, because I was at the Forbidden Door when he faced Kenny Omega. Amazing match. Near the end of it, he did a move called a Tiger Driver 90, whatever the fuck it's called. Dropped the guy on his neck. I'm looking like, did he fuck up? Is Kenny Omega okay? Is he paralyzed? Gets up to his sitting position. Will Ospreay comes up, elbows him in the back of the head. I'm like, okay, they're going to kill
fine.
The guy.
He's good.
He'll be off in a stretcher, come back in 8 months. It's good. So I hope he just changes the in-ring style. He doesn't have to do all those moves, but I think Ospreay and WWE would be a really good move for them.
I think the worst case scenario right now for this run with Seth is he beats Drew McIntyre at Crown Jewel to no heel turn, no cash in. And then the next pay-per-view, they do the same thing and they do the Drew heel turn too late, lost momentum. Yeah, maybe he could win the World Heavyweight title, but we already know that. I think we have discussed a lot of failed cash-ins in the past. Damian Priest is not failing it. I think he's winning the belt, and I think WWE has done a phenomenal job building him. Because this was a guy, what, 2 years ago when he was feuding with Sheamus for the United States title? He had a lot of substance. He had a lot of promise. Never thought it would amount to much. Because guess what, man? He was in a tag team with Bad Bunny. So I'm really happy for the way they built him. I think he's deserving of a world title, whether it's him, whether it's a heel Drew McIntyre. I think when push comes to shove at this point in time, the right call is Seth Rollins. Maybe take some time off, drop the belt, come back maybe for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's what I think.
Get some time to freshen things up.
I mean, now we got to quickly talk more about Edge. Adam Copeland. Sorry. That's my boy, man. I've watched him since I was 5 years old. My favorite wrestler of all time. I remember we were talking about it, his last match here in Toronto against Sheamus. That match was freaking insane, man. That match was nuts. I'd say that was probably one of the better SmackDown matches I can remember in a very long time. He laid it all out there with Sheamus. What are your thoughts on Adam Copeland going to AEW? Do you think it's good for the wrestling business? And what do you think we can expect in terms of potential feuds with Adam Copeland moving forward? Is it a 1 year? Is it a 5 year? What do you think it is?
I think it's going to be like a 1 year full time. And then after that, similar to Brian, where they'll see how he did after the 1 year and then scale it back. But he said he has been full time right now. But in terms of matches, I think this Christian one, they're really leaning into this. I think eventually it is going to lead to Luchasaurus, Nick Wayne, and maybe Jungle Boy comes back and they all turn and on Christian, with Jungle Boy as a leader. So I think it's all going to lead to Christian turning face again and Edge as a face, them teaming up. Maybe them and the Hardy Boys one more time. That would be fun. But other than that, like Adam Copeland, I want to see him face guys like Swerve. Even if he goes up with Sting for his final match, I think that would be a nice send-off. So there are some interesting ones for him there.
Do you think more WWE superstars are going to do that just because of the different levels of talent in AEW? Because there's a lot of unhappy people in AEW, in WWE. Do you see a lot more crossing over both sides?
Yeah, I think even now too, like WWE guys, when they get to like a certain age and like, oh, I can be on a Legends deal and maybe come back for a Royal Rumble or stuff, or go to AEW and work with a bunch of new guys, like the Jericho approach where different feuds, stay against like some of these younger guys that you never really had the chance to work with. I just don't see like guys like Kenny Omega, unfortunately, going to WWE, even though that's the one out of the Young Bucks and him and Hangman. I think Kenny would be probably best served if he went there.
Oh, he'd probably be the top guy immediately. I would make him the top guy. I think MJF is a guy where he's going to be the future of the business if he's not already the present of it. So I think MJF going over is probably I'm going to say it's a lock, actually. I think
2024.
I think he's going to WWE. I think he sees maybe SummerSlam as maybe like a debut for MJF. He could come with the devil mask. I think that'd be a cool look. But before we move on to NBA quickly, I want to talk about Jade Cargill going to WWE. We have a lot of potential feuds for her. What do you think is that one feud that stands out, at least in Jade Cargill's mind, going to WWE?
I think the only thing that I like about this is like she's on every show, so you don't know which one she's going to be on. I think she'll end up being on Raw, and it's showing like WWE's fans that she's a big deal, the way they present her when she comes up, has the stare downs.
Yeah.
But when she eventually debuts, this is going to be a very unpopular choice. I think her first opponent is going to be Nia Jax.
I was just going to say that, yep. I think
it's not going to be what people are wanting or expecting. So, unfortunately, Nia Jax, she's going to beat Nia Jax, and then I think we'll see the match. Like Bianca Belair, I think, is the one that fans will probably want to see.
I have this weird feeling, we're going to get Jade Cargill versus Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. And it's going to be like Asuka those years ago, where she's going to come in, all the momentum, and Charlotte's going to slap her, be like, nah, I'm winning. You're not winning. So hopefully, I'm wrong with that. I hope Jade Cargill has a lot of potential in WWE. Please don't waste her like they did with Lacey Evans, because Lacey Evans had a lot of potential. They just didn't do anything with her. So we're going to end today's podcast talking about the NBA. We all know the season started last night. There are a lot of rule changes, Alino. A lot. I got to give Adam Silver a lot of credit. This league makes a boatload of money every year. More than probably any other league. Maybe the NFL makes a little bit more, but that's about it. 65 games now is the minimum you have to play if you want to win an NBA award. We all know that a lot of these stars, your boy Kawhi Leonard being one of them, does not play 65 games a year. Do you think this is going to motivate these stars to play 65 games, to get the MVPs, to get those awards? Or do you think to them, regular season awards are just worthless?
I think to them, it's they're going to find a new way to load manage. So they'll probably play like 7 minutes in the first half, five in the second, as a way to like still play, keep their numbers up. But I don't think it's going to make a difference.
I agree with you, unfortunately. We saw last night with LeBron. Guy played 28 minutes. I think if you're the Lakers, if you're the Clippers, Kawhi and Paul George on average, what? 20? Yeah. I'll say on back-to-backs, 20 minutes.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. 25. Last year, you know, they're taking on Atlanta. Kawhi looks at the depth chart. I don't have to play. It's Atlanta. Who the hell do they have? Trae Young? Trae Young is out. He's not playing. So my whole point, I was saying this to my physio. You buy tickets, right? $300 tickets. You go to a Raptor game. Me and my brother witnessed this last year. They're taking on the Pacers. Who's playing for the Pacers? Brissett, great player. Buddy Hield is out. Miles Turner is out. Halliburton is out. All of them are out. All the stars are out. For the Raptors, who was out? Pascal Siakam was out. Who the hell are we watching? Scottie Barnes, by the way, was out. Who are we watching? Fred Van Fleet going 2-for-17. So at this point in time, I love what Adam Silver's doing. People are paying a lot of money to go see these stars and they don't play. Like I saw last year, did you see that one person? They traveled like 4,000 kilometers to see, I think it was Jimmy Butler, and he didn't play. And it's like, man,
felt bad for them.
Come on. Yeah. And then he gets the picture and like, yeah. Come on. He wanted to see you drop 40. So what are your thoughts on this? Do you think it's something that's going to stick, or do you think by next year they're just not going to give a shit about it anymore?
They'll probably do like something where like 65, they'll say, oh, okay, like an injury might pull up. They'll move it down. Like I think every year they'll move it down where 60 will be like the cutoff. Like I don't think 50 will be a cutoff, because that's still like you're able to miss almost half the year. So I think 60, if you can play 60% of the games, I think you'll be a finalist at most.
I mean, I think when we talk about the NBA season this year, it is, to me, unpredictable. I think it's one of the more unpredictable seasons. I want to quickly talk more about Damian Lillard getting traded to the Bucks. I think that's insane. I think that's something that it put Twitter in a frenzy. It put a lot of people in a frenzy. I think now with Giannis re-signing in Milwaukee, they're probably maybe not the favorite. I think maybe they are. It's between them and Phoenix. Do you see the league being more competitive this year, or do you think there's still that super team that trumps everybody else?
I think it's going to be competitive with the duos, but once it gets to the, like, even we see what Golden State has been able to do, they put Chris Paul on the team. Like, if he starts getting going and he's able to get guys like Clay going, Steph more space, you're going to see that emphasis on them. So I think it's going to be one of those things where the super team eventually, some guys are going to get out of their deal at the trade deadline and then sign the rest of the year with Milwaukee.
So we're going to end this podcast with award predictions, just because we have to do it. Who is your MVP for this season? I already know who Nick's MVP is. It's probably the guy in Denver, the guy that all he cares about is horse racing more than anything else. Guy is nonchalantly dropping, 30, 12, and 14 every game? Insane. Alino, I got to go to you, man. Who in your mind is the MVP this season?
I think it's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a toss-up. There's going to be a European.
Oh.
The Greek freak.
The Greek freak bounces back. But
I think
back.
Joker is going to it's gonna be between those two. I don't think Embiid with Harden and that mess in Philadelphia. I think that's not going to happen this year. But I do think Giannis and Joker will be going back and forth on that.
I'm going to go here. I think it's a little off the board. I'm going to go with Luka Doncic finally getting his MVP because we all know that the league kind of favors these guys that haven't won anything. Joel Embiid last year shouldn't have won that. But I do think Luka Doncic with Kyrie Irving now back and in the system, getting the chemistry from day one, I expect big things from Luka Doncic. If not MVP, at least leading the league in points for sure. I think it's between him and Giannis for that. I got to go with Luka, man. I'm gonna take a risk with Luka Doncic. But who do you guys think is going to be the most improved player this year? Because I see on the books, FanDuel has Austin Reeves as the favorite. I think they're dead wrong with that one.
You know what? That's going to be another hot take. Most improved, I'll go with two. Scottie Barnes, will be in that category, just be technicality.
You took mine.
And the other one, he's in Houston, Dylan Brooks. He's going to dance his way to most improved.
I love that. I think if there's one guy I think that could win the most improved and it could come out of nowhere, you're going to laugh at me on this one. I think Keegan Murray for Sacramento, like the guy, his role is going to be a lot bigger. Another guy I do think that could win most improved player, didn't really play last year, Cade Cunningham. Let's see what he can do in a full season. But Scottie Barnes was my pick, but I guess for the runner-up, just because Keegan Murray is so out there, I'm going to go with Cade Cunningham winning the most improved player of the year. But I'm going to, you know what? It was a good first day, Alino. You know, we're here. We're in the studio. And we got producer Nick here. It's going to be a great season, I think, for me and you. I think this is just the beginning. Just everything else, we just got to wait and see. I think at this point in time, Steph Curry is a guy that we can never, ever count out for MVP. He's the man. Last night he showed it. But as always, Giancarlo Alino, Chris Martelli in the zone, signing out.